Welcome back to Through the Word. Peyton Jones here, and I'll be your guide on your journey today through Matthew 22. Most of us have been sucked into a video game at least once in our life, whether it's something like Zelda or old school Pac-Man, but for me, it was Pitfall in the 80s. A 16-bit pixelated Indiana Jones was mind to control through swamps, across pits, and over logs. Well, Matthew 22 sees Jesus avoiding the pitfalls that the Pharisees try and lay for him with three carefully crafted questions designed to trap Jesus in his own words. Jesus, who cracked the whip in the temple and told unflattering parables about them in our last chapter, continues it in this one, in verse 1. Jesus spoke to them again in parables, saying, "The kingdom of heaven is like a king who prepared a wedding banquet for his son. He sent his servants to those who had been invited to the banquet to tell them to come, but they refused to come. Then he sent some more servants and said, 'Tell those who have been invited that I have prepared my dinner, my oxen and fatted cattle have been butchered, and everything is ready. Come to the wedding banquet.' But they paid no attention and went off, one to his field, another to his business. The rest seized his servants, mistreated them, and killed them. The king was enraged. He sent his army and destroyed those murderers and burned their city. Then he said to his servants, 'The wedding banquet is ready, but those I invited did not deserve to come. So go to the street corners and invite to the banquet anyone you find.' So the servants went out into the streets and gathered all the people they could find, the bad as well as the good, and the wedding hall was filled with guests. But when the king came in to see the guests, he noticed a man there who was not wearing wedding clothes. He asked, 'How did you get in here without wedding clothes, friend?' The man was speechless." So first, Jesus presents the Pharisees as those unwilling to come for whatever reason. And the city being destroyed in the parable is a reference to the temple being razed to the ground by the Romans, orchestrated by God in judgment against them for ejecting the living temple walking in their midst, Jesus. In the earlier chapter, Jesus had said that prostitutes and tax collectors were entering heaven before the religious teachers because they received Jesus. But at the end of this parable, we see a man not wearing wedding clothes. And this refers to someone trying to sneak in for the free food, but he didn't know the groom. That still happens today. People smell the food, see the party, and they try to blend in church. The religious leaders wanted to go to the king's banquet, but they didn't want to know the king. Jesus ends the parable saying, "For many are invited, but few are chosen." The words "chosen" here would have stung. The religious teachers prided themselves on being God's chosen people. But here, Jesus is saying that God's chosen people are no longer defined by being Hebrews. They are those who receive Jesus. The religious teachers, however, are ready for a counterattack. Verse 15. "Then the Pharisees went out and laid plans to trap him in his words. They sent their disciples to him along with the Herodians." The Herodians would surely report Jesus to the Romans. "Teacher," they said, "we know that you are a man of integrity and that you teach the way of God in accordance with the truth. You aren't swayed by the others because you pay no attention to who they are. Tell us then, what is your opinion? Is it right to pay the imperial tax to Caesar or not?" Note the elaborate setup, complete with two-faced flattery. Verse 18. "But Jesus, knowing their evil intent, said, 'You hypocrites, why are you trying to trap me?'" I love that Jesus calls them out directly here. A hypocrite, by the way, is an actor. And Jesus tells them, "I see right through your mask." Verse 19, "Show me the coin used for paying the tax." They brought him a denarius, and he asked them, "Whose image is this?" "Caesar's," they replied. Then he said to them, "So give back to Caesar what is Caesar's, and to God what's God's." When they heard this, they were amazed, so they left him and went away. Well, that was amazing. Jesus literally tells them that if Caesar's image is stamped on a coin, then you're just borrowing it. But God's image is stamped on you. Therefore, give what is God's back to God. Give yourself to him. Jesus was beyond capable of handling these jokers, as we just saw. But then, the Pharisees and Sadducees try and get him to take a theological side in their debate about the resurrection. Maybe he'll alienate half the crowd this way. The Sadducees didn't believe in the resurrection, so they give a ridiculous scenario. A woman has the worst luck ever with men. They keep dying on her. In the end, after multiple deaths of multiple husbands, they ask, which man would be her husband in heaven? Again, Jesus' response seems so effortless here. He sidesteps their pitfall, swings right across the controversy, and answers the question in verse 29. Jesus replied, "You're in error because you don't know the scriptures or the power of God. At the resurrection, people will neither marry nor be given in marriage. They will be like the angels in heaven. But about the resurrection of the dead, have you not read what God said to you? I am the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. He is not the God of the dead, but of the living." Not only did Jesus tell them that they didn't know the scriptures that well to even ask such a question, he also tells them that God introduces himself as the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, like they were all still alive and still worshiping him. Verse 33 tells us, when the crowd heard this, they were astonished at his teaching. In a way, he did pick a side with that one. Hearing that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, the Pharisees got together. In verse 35 we read, one of them, an expert in the law, tested him with this question, "Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law?" Jesus replied, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment, and the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments." Okay, so far Jesus has sidestepped every trap, alligator den, and covered pit that they've laid out for him. But like Indiana Jones, Jesus can fight and give as good as he gets. So he gives them a riddle in return to their question, and they walk right into it. While the Pharisees were gathered together, in verse 41, Jesus asked them, "What do you think about the Messiah? Whose son is he?" "The son of David," they replied. The Messiah had the title Son of David because God had promised David that through him and his line, the Messiah would come. In verse 43, he said to them, "If he's David's son, how is it then that David, speaking by the Spirit, calls him Lord? For he says, 'The Lord said to my Lord, sit at my right hand until I put your enemies under your feet.' If David calls him Lord, how can he be his son?" No one could say a word in reply, and from that day on, no one dared to ask him any more questions. No one dared ask him any more questions. They fell victim to one of the classic blunders. The most famous is, never match wits with a Sicilian when death is on the line. But a lesser known one is, never go toe-to-toe in a battle of wits with the creator of the universe. Well, until next time, I'll see you on our journey through the Word.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the Word.